I'm Jarrett Carpenter, and this is More Than Blockchain. On this episode, we are going to dive into meme coins, and we have Brian Naughton on, who I've known through LinkedIn for many years. We've still never met IRL, but such is crypto, such is building things on the internet. Brian, how are you?
I'm doing great, thanks, Jarrett, and glad to be with you and to chat again. It's been a while since we caught up, so good to see you.
It's been a while. And today I want to talk about meme coins because, and I just said this to you right before we kind of press record here, but I think meme coins are challenging people, not just within crypto, but especially in crypto, like us and others, you know, people in our cohort, our peers. It's challenging us to ask questions about value. It's challenging us to ask questions about digital value. It's challenging us to ask questions, not just about digital value, but as you pointed out in your more recent article, which I am going to reference as though it were the Bible. Hopefully that doesn't offend people. I want to reference that as much as I can today because I think you just did an excellent job. And that article is called Meme Coin Mania Takes Over Crypto. Because outside of just questioning digital value and whether crypto is valuable, it forces us to question the current moment in society where it feels like things are coming unhinged. And I just watched a clip right before we hopped on here of Lawrence Leopard, who is basically like, look, if the money's broken, the world's broken. You got to fix the money to fix the world, right? And so what is now valuable in the world we live in, right? So meme coin mania takes over crypto. I don't even know where to start. I guess if we could, I'm going to go ahead and start with a quote. And I'll show this to the screen, and I feel like someone who's just using the internet for the first time. But these are all the quotes that I screenshotted and then, you know, highlighted. But essentially, you've done a really good job of breaking down meme coin mania, why it exists. And I want to start with this. You say, now look, at first glance for meme coins, it's easy to dismiss all this hype as yet another gigantic crypto dumpster fire. So my question for you about this article and just in general with meme coins, because I've kind of gone on my own journey too about my thinking, how long did it take you to write this article? And for you, because you show both a potentially positive or an explanation of meme coins, as well as like what I think most people's knee-jerk reactions are, which is like, this stuff is crap. So anyway, I've now spoken a lot. I want to give you the mic. You are here for the reason. Please talk to me about your journey with meme coins and what inspired you to write this specific article.
Yeah, I mean, I think I started, I mean, there was, you know, meme coins. I guess you could, you know, go back to Dogecoin as the first kind of breakthrough meme coin, which was, when was that? 2015 or something? You know, it was a while ago. So the genre has been, you know, in the space bubbling over, and then one of the best performing altcoins of last cycle was, I believe, Shiba Inu. So, you know, there was this kind of like meta that existed prior to this cycle, but you've had meme coins on Ethereum generally. This cycle, there appears to be a few different things happening. I mean, one of them is the rise of lower cost blockchains, a higher throughput, lower transaction fee blockchains like Solana and more recently Base. And I believe there's also meme coin activity on other chains like Avalanche, for example, and even Telegram now on the Ton network. So, I mean, I started very much, you know, from that position of these are nothing but sort of meaningless tokens with absolutely no intrinsic value. That's where I started from. But because of all of the interest and activity and the huge gains this time round with meme coins like Dog with Hat, for example, I decided to, you know, rather than just jump to a conclusion about what they were about, having watched a few Bankless episodes of people sort of getting frustrated and angry that the space was being misrepresented after everything that happened last year or 2022 with FTX and all the rest of it, I decided basically to get stuck in and do a deep dive. And I spent about 6 weeks researching it, and then I wrote the article, and I guess the article took me the best part of a week really to piece together for publishing on my Substack newsletter. But yeah, so that was how I sort of came into the process, and as a result, I learned a huge amount and just, you know, thought a lot more deeply about what was going on.
Do you own any meme coins?
I do. Yeah, I do. I was trading them for a while on centralized exchanges like MEXC, and just seeing what happened. But I've recently tumbled into the Solana ecosystem with a Phantom wallet, and I've started purchasing meme coins as well. Yeah, using Dex Screener, but I'm still very early. I'm playing around, but obviously the main draw, apart from memes are part of the culture and understanding all that side of things, is the enormous gains that you can experience from picking the right meme coin. So that's certainly part of the allure as an asset class, if you wanted to call it that.
Let's come back to calling it an asset class, because I want to build towards that, the new definition of value on the internet, right? And I want to call out, you say early on in the article, you say, look, if you were degenerate enough to put in $10,000 into Dog with Hat at the tail end of last year, at the end of 2023, you'd now be a multimillionaire, sitting on profits approximately $6 million at the time of writing. So that seems kind of ridiculous. So here we are with meme coins, right? We'll call that the trees, right? Each meme coin is a tree, but I feel like then there's the forest, and I'm going to build a weird analogy here, okay? The forest is crypto, okay? And then the world is just the world. So crypto obviously exists in the world that we live in, and then in that world of crypto, there are individual trees, which are the meme coins. Or maybe it's better that they're called branches, because many of these are still made off of Ethereum, which I guess could be a tree. I'm interested now to really kind of like dive in and just have a broader conversation about how meme coins fit into society and our questioning of what is now worth value. Like let's now start to define the value, because there's something going on, and you and I are not part of this generation. So we're going to talk about a generation, even though we're not part of it, which I don't know how I feel about that, but we're going to do it anyways. Generation Z, and you actually called this out, and let me see if I can find it. You were talking about how even in China, there is a saying, and it looks like it's Bailan, which means let it rot. And there's this idea throughout the younger generations, and I guess I'm going to kind of harp a little bit on Gen Z, that it's kind of, and I forget the exact, and I was looking it up before we hopped on, but it's this idea that like, no house, no assets, no worries, something like that. And maybe you know what I'm actually trying to talk about with them being, I'm just pejoratively now talking, unfortunately, about Gen Z, but it's this younger generation that now has almost nothing to kind of look forward to financially. They are probably going to never afford real estate, which for most of human civilization has been a bedrock of how you build wealth, okay? So they're kind of taxed out of that. As you wrote in your article, they can barely afford rent. I have many friends right now that are either homeowners and house poor meaning they have a house, they're barely paying that off, but everything else they're underwater and they're probably in credit card debt. Or I have friends that are trying to put people together into apartments, or they live like me in South America or in other parts of the world to take advantage of currency because they can't actually afford to live in certain places. So let's try to go back here. The analogy of the tree is Ethereum. On Ethereum, we have a meme coin. The forest is crypto. Crypto lives in the world. If you could just kind of extrapolate more on your philosophies and how you've kind of tried to put meme coins in their place in society and how they are actually saying something larger about our flawed money, our flawed value system, our flawed global economies and local economies. And I just spoke a lot. So once again, I'm going to pass you back. I read your article and it really hit on so many different levels for me, because we shouldn't just discount meme coins just because we think, as you said, that they're just a dumpster fire within crypto.
Yeah. I mean, there's a few things there really to unpack. I mean, the first of which is, you know, crypto and particularly meme coins are often described as a Ponzi scheme. And I think, you know, for the younger generation, in actual fact, what a Ponzi scheme is the entire fucking thing. Do you know what I mean? It's the US dollar. It's the system that they've been priced out of. Everything, you know, well, the what's going on with the level of debt in the United States and in most fiat economies is a Ponzi scheme, we're effectively borrowing from the future. And it's getting to the point, for example, in the United States where they won't even be able to make the welfare payments soon, you know, let alone the defense budget and all the rest of it. So there's a kind of an aspect to this which is related to financial nihilism. I mean, if you can't afford property and you don't have stocks and shares and all the rest of it, and inflation is going up and your purchasing power is going down, I mean, you're basically screwed. So, I mean, that's the first thing I'd say. If we're talking about Ponzi schemes, society itself is a Ponzi scheme. And then the second thing is that I relate a lot of this to what happened with the Wall Street Bets scenario. I can't remember exactly when that was off the top of my head. Was it 2020, 2021? It was the kind of a meme at the time. But basically, everyone's fed up with hedge funds and TradFi engaging in naked short selling. And they were trying to basically tank GameStop because it was a, you know, it was like a blockbuster type business model. It didn't make sense anymore. And the degens via this Reddit subgroup decided that what they were going to do is they noticed how heavily shorted GameStop was. They were going to buy up the stock and then force basically a short squeeze, which meant that the hedge funds were suddenly scrambling around wondering like how deep their pockets were because they were getting burned. And indeed, the government eventually had to step in and ask Robinhood to stop trading on GameStop, which they obliged to do. But I think that was the beginning of it, basically, which is a backlash amongst younger people who feel like the system is rigged or they've been priced out of the system, deciding to make up their own rules. And then the second thing I think is these people are naturally drawn to crypto because of the ethos that it represents. I mean, Bitcoin itself was a reaction to this world with the, you know, in the immediate aftermath of the 2008 financial crisis and central banks' profligate sort of, you know, printing of money into the economy and the bailouts and everything else that happened. So these people were drawn into crypto only to find that they are the exit liquidity in so many of these sort of quote unquote serious crypto projects. For example, recently we had the Eigenlayer sort of scandal, whereby Eigenlayer, which is a restaking protocol, garnered a huge market valuation based on its total value locked, which was predominantly retail people putting in money for the hope of getting whatever points and airdrops downstream. And the whole project just turned around and dumped on them, basically. And I think, you know, retail investors are fed up of being the exit liquidity for venture capital and unscrupulous founders. So that points again, it's like, why do they want to play by the rules that are rigged against them? They'll go and make their own thing, and what they're making is meme coins. So that's a kind of like a summary, really, of some of the main areas that I think are coming into play with this meme coin revolution, as it were.
Yeah, one of the things you also mentioned that I found absolutely fascinating was that these two ideas. Well, first of all, the idea of a scam, whatever a scam is. And I love that you called out, hey, society is a scam. If we can just print money ad infinitum, you know, if the Fed can just print money to then pay off the $900 billion in defense, and we'll be giving, I think, $1.1 trillion into Social Security soon to cover these things, if we can just print money, then the whole thing's a Ponzi scheme. So if the whole thing, if the base money that we use, the fiat money that people are using, whether it's the pound where you are, whether it's the dollar where I am, it's the euro, it's the peso, if that's already a scam, then how do you build anything on top of it that's legitimate, which is where I think Bitcoin is actually a very interesting thing when it comes to money. But we'll step away from that. And I want to, you know, talking about what a Ponzi scheme is, I think is really important, because a lot of people, that's the first thing they say when they say it about crypto. I have a saying, if you don't understand what a Ponzi scheme is, you're more likely to get taken away by one, right? The other thing that you mentioned was the fact that meme coins are essentially a more egalitarian lottery system. Could you talk about that? because that kind of gets into this idea of percentages and how likely you are to win or to thrive. And that, as you call out and statistics show, the lower your wealth is, the more likely you are to buy scratch tickets or lottery tickets.
I think it's right to say that rich people don't do the lottery to the same extent that poor people do. It's an extent of the kind of like wishful or magical thinking or desperation that people experience. You know, it enables them to suspend disbelief for the amount of time until they realize that they haven't won the lottery until the next week rolls around. And I think I'm going off the top of my head now, but I think there's an annual spending on lottery tickets in the United States of $160 billion. And you have a 1 in 292 million chance of winning the Powerball or whatever it is. So realistically, it's never going to happen. You know, it's like a needle in a haystack. Whereas, whilst it's important to realize that you couldn't consider putting money into a meme coin as any form of real investment strategy and should be regarded as more of a kind of casino proposition, if you are lucky enough or agile enough or kind of like adept enough at spotting the next trend, or you know what you're doing in terms of predetermining which are the ones that are going to run and looking at the socials and all the rest of it. You know, it's a gamification of the process of buying into certain memes. Or maybe you just, you know, stick a lot of money in something that's pumping or whatever. But either way, you actually stand a better chance of coming away with 100x or 1000x than you do in any traditional form of gambling. So I think even if you look at it purely as a kind of a social lottery, it makes quite a lot of sense. There are obviously pump and dumps, and you're looking for fair launch. Meme coins are a very different proposition to the ones that are organized by scammers and are rug pulls, of which there are many. But notwithstanding, you know, putting $20 or $100 or whatever amount of sol into a meme coin, You've got a better chance of actually winning a significant amount than in any other form of gambling where the house always wins.
Yeah, I thought that was absolutely spot on, because when you say it's 1 in 292 million, I mean, I'm going to round a little bit, but that's like picking one person out of the United States to win the money. And that's ridiculous. Your chances of doing that are crazy. And we also know people who win the lottery within like 3 or 5 years, the money's gone, right? Making money is different from managing money, and managing money is even different from growing money, right? So in the article, you said something and it made me burst out laughing, also because I have family members that handicap horse races. Now they bet $1 or $2. They're not degenerate. It's more just like a fascinating thing that they're interested in the math and looking at it. But you said, you know, buying a meme coin in the hopes of becoming rich. First of all, this is definitely, none of this is financial advice today. You know, do not buy meme coins unless you are into what I'm about to say, in that it is a bet on a three-legged horse running in a meme culture derby alongside a crowded field of other three-legged horses. It's that simple. Now, the thing I'm interested in, and I want to ask you, once again, we're going to talk about Generation Z, even though neither of us are part of Generation Z. I don't see a situation in which this generation is not going to continue to latch on to things like meme coins. And I think meme coins are in many ways just the beginning, because the one thing that I think meme coins has that the Powerball doesn't have, for example, in the US, I think that was a great example, the 180 billion or 68 billion that you called out. The one thing that meme coins have is it creates community. You can follow a Twitter account. You can hop in a Reddit. You can be part of a Discord. You can, you know, hop on a live. You can listen to people. There's people content creating about it. It's a very interactive thing. It's kind of there's a two-way street about it, which doesn't exist in other ways. And I am going to call meme coins gambling, because if you're putting money into these things thinking you're going to have a return, it is a gamble. It is no different than going to the roulette wheel, putting your $5 chip down, and you have 1 in 36 odds, or 1 in 37, I think, because there's the two, the green zeros. So do you think that this is going to continue? Because for me, I think it does. But I'm interested to hear your opinions. You're also on the other side of the Atlantic. You're seeing a different economic situation. But from where I am, in between where I live here in Colombia and the time I spend in the States, I am seeing a lot of economic strife right now.
It's the same here. Yeah, everyone's getting squeezed. Basically, like I said, unless you already own significant assets, your purchasing power is going down all the time. And certainly here as elsewhere, there's wage stagnation as well. So, yeah, I mean, it's that financial status quo is going to continue and perhaps even get much worse as we go on. But I think other like picking up on how you were framing some of that, there's a bigger picture thing here. You mentioned that, like, the community aspect and feeling a sense of belonging and being able to follow, and it just being a bit culturally richer than other forms of gambling, like going to a casino in Las Vegas or buying a lottery ticket, is that it's based on memes. Web3, people talk about an internet of value and the fact that this is what really, what Bitcoin represented was creating a solid foundational layer for a new internet of money. And we've had all kinds of instruments come out, both in terms of utility tokens and in terms of protocols to do with staking and earning yield, and AI more recently, and all kinds of other things that are being built on top of that. But what we're also seeing is a move to apportion value to memes. Memes have existed since the dawn of the World Wide Web, really. And if you, for example, dog with hat is not something that was just pulled out of a hat, if you'll excuse the pun, recently. It was a meme that existed on the internet in 2009, you know. So, I mean, it was interesting that they chose that, because to some extent it's probably predictable that it would have done so well, because it did very well the first time round when there was no infrastructure available to tokenize or commoditize or monetize the value of that meme. And we live in increasingly in an attention economy. And they say that attention drives liquidity, but culture drives attention. And memes are basically the lingua franca of the internet. So, you know, to me, it's not a bug or an aberration. It's a feature of the system. In other words, like, meme coins are an inevitable development within this whole crypto ecosystem where we're talking about tokenizing value.
When I read this part in the article where you're talking about, no, meme coins are actually part of the roadmap. It's the most logical thing that we would do as we start to tokenize social capital, visual social capital, which is like a meme and a visual thing with dog with hat for the example. And then we can exchange it. It made me start to think of a couple things. It made me think about my own childhood growing up, where my parents wouldn't let me play video games. And I've said that 1,000 times on More Than Blockchain, because I think it's really important, especially now. If there's anyone under about the age of 25, that like doesn't exist anymore. Parents are not going to tell kids not to play video games, because they can do it on their phone, they can do it on their iPad, they can do it on their desktop, they can play it on their TV. When I was young, it was like, no, we're not bringing Nintendo 64 in the house. And I remember when it came out, because all my friends got that for Christmas and they were playing James Bond, GoldenEye, 007 to this day. I mean, very like visceral. So all the things essentially that for me as a kid were games, Pokemon, Magic trading cards, even trading baseball cards, video games, all of these things now are monetized and massive, massive, massive industries. Now, the Magic trading cards, the Pokemon, the baseball cards or sports cards, those are more from like a collectible, right? But there is a community around that. And then you have video games and the idea of you and I could be playing a game and we're both using pseudonymous names and we could be betting against each other with using crypto or using something on blockchain, or maybe it's within the game, as many games are still kind of their own little kingdoms or fiefdoms. It makes sense in that world. And having said that out loud, that meme coins have value and they're going to continue to have value. And my question for you, or what I'm really interested. I'm interested to see how corporations are going to latch onto crypto over the next 18 months. A lot of corporations have walked away from crypto recently. You had the Odyssey program, the membership program with Starbucks. They've since walked away from that. You had the Dot Swoosh, which was Nike's NFT project, which I bought many Dot Swooshes. I was like, why would I not buy these? Sneakerheads are crazy. When they realize the digital is more valuable and it's easier to trade, you don't need inventory, I bought a bunch. It's okay. It was all part of this process. I'm interested to see, and I want to ask you, what corporations, well, first of all, we're going to assume that corporations are going to try to make their own memes to sell. And then what corporation do you think will be one of the first corporations to Fortune 500 companies, big brands that we all use, to try to create their own meme and then monetize it? Whether that's essentially creating their own, I'm trying to think, their own Mickey Mouse, okay? If Mickey Mouse were to come out now, you would monetize that. You would NFT it. You could do all these things. I know Disney has their own NFT collection, but what is going to be the new Mickey Mouse for this young generation? Now I'm going to talk about a generation that I don't think, actually I have had guests on from Generation Alpha, I believe, but Generation Alpha, which I believe is anyone under like about 12 or 11 years old right now. What is the corporation? Because I think in this next bull run, a corporation is going to create a meme just to monetize it. Because at the end of the day, that's what they're trying to do. Profit. They have to look at their P&L sheet. They have to make profit. So here we go. What corporation is going to make a meme, and what's that meme going to be? And maybe you'll crystal ball and we'll sell this for billions to whoever.
That's a tough one, really. And I've never quite thought about it. I mean, there's a reputational issue that would send the lawyers screaming down the hallways, I would imagine, with this kind of stuff for any of the major sort of blue chip brands. And also maybe, you know, the whole situation with the SEC as well. But if I had to guess, I would say, I mean, you mentioned Mickey Mouse and all the rest of it. Entertainments would be a sector where you'd have to say that there might be a likelihood in the fullness of time of something happening there with already a sort of a lean towards cartoon characters or memetics of some description anyway. And then maybe also you could think of fast moving consumer goods, you know, maybe the Coca-Colas of the world or whatever. But when you were asking me, I kind of thought really the first kind of brand, it's likely to be someone more like Snoop Dogg, I think. In other words, a big brand, but a brand based around a personality rather than a product. But I could definitely see, you know, someone like Snoop or someone equivalent with a big following launching a, you know, you could call it a fan token, but that really what we're talking about is a meme token. Of course, meme tokens don't necessarily mean that there is no utility. I mean, for example, you've got Tooka at the moment, which is a meme coin that's based on this Tucker Carlson character, who's a ripoff of Tucker Carlson. And they've developed a media show which is commenting on crypto in a kind of funny kind of degen way. And they're now attracting sponsors onto the videos that they're creating. And they're using that sponsorship revenue to burn tokens. And I can imagine all kinds of other utilities. For example, if you take the Snoop Dogg thing, you know, if you were to hold and lock your tokens, you would get benefits of other kinds to do with his music or certain events, you know, so that there could be that crossover that you get with NFTs providing sort of gated community experiences and all the rest of it. So I think it's a very fertile area. Whether or not all of this stuff will be called meme coins or fan tokens or something else remains to be seen. But I think as far as this cycle goes, I think people are severely, you know, it's the Bitcoin is dead, meme coins are dead, NFTs are dead. This cycle is probably going to melt people's faces as far as the meme coin side of things is concerned. We've already got, for example, VanEck recently launching a meme coin index, which is tracking the top six meme coins by market cap. Hedge funds are interested in meme coins. Meme coins aren't going away, and I think they're going to outperform probably everything, including Bitcoin, this market cycle.
Yeah, of that, I actually have no doubt. There will be meme coins that you could put $100 in. And as you said, the meme coins now are different because they don't have the fees, where it used to be for paying the gas on Ethereum, I put $100 in, but $50 would go to the network, essentially. So I would only have $50 in the pot. But now with Base and Solana, their fees are so small, I think people are going to be really incentivized to do it financially, and they're also just going to feel a lot less friction in the process. One of the weird things is, I agree, I don't know if they're going to be called meme coins or fan tokens. One of the other weird things for me, this is the weird thing for me, I am a very left person, and I don't mind saying that. This is my platform. If you don't agree with my political takes, that's fine, because the beauty about crypto and Bitcoin is I sit in rooms with people all day. I work with people professionally and collaborate with people here who maybe we don't have the same political ideologies. And that's okay, because we're all here for a new way to think about the internet and exchanging value in a permissionless network. However, when you look at the political landscape in the United States right now, it is broken down between the aisles. The right and the Republicans versus the left and the Democrats, the Republicans are in on crypto. They're in on Bitcoin. They're in on Bitcoin mining. While the left, a lot of this is driven by Senator Elizabeth Warren, who is the senator of my home state in the U.S., is very much against it. And a lot of it comes down to money laundering issues, or that's what it basically, that is the shield she is using to get close enough to basically tank crypto. But the reason why I bring that up is because it is so strange to me that people think Bitcoin or crypto or none of this is going to survive. And when you really step back and look, you have a presidential candidate who was already president in Donald Trump, who has launched two successful NFT projects. And I'll say successful, I'll define that by being they've sold out and they continue to, you know, move forward, not only in price, but like in their community dynamic. And he recently just said, not even like 24 to 48 hours ago, that he's very open to all of this new technology. He's open to the way that, now I'm paraphrasing, he doesn't say this, he would never say this, but he's open to the way that, you know, it connects communities and it basically creates energy between people that didn't exist before. Once again, he would not say that. That's not Donald Trump, right? I don't know what he would say, but not that. But that to me is absolutely fascinating, because if you are a degen and you are listening to this, and once again, this is not financial advice, if he wins the presidency, which I would say is a 50-50, so you could flip a coin. He wins the presidency, those NFTs are going to 10x over the next 12 months. I will bet my bottom dollar. Now, I won't buy one just for reasons. I don't really want to support that man at all in anything that he's doing. And I know if I give money to buy those NFTs, it will go to him. But there will be people, as you've called them, fiat millionaires, who are going to buy a bunch of those on election night should he win. In fact, in and around the election night in November, if he's doing well, basically if he wins Florida, those will take off. And I don't know if you can put a put or a call on those, but I would love to find another way to engage in that ecosystem, because those are going to absolutely explode should he win. And so I didn't know about this Tuka coin for Tucker Carlson. That also doesn't surprise me that someone's doing that. That's incredible. I need to look at some of that content, because I'm sure it's funny. As you look forward for meme coins, what is something that hasn't happened yet, but will be kind of a canary in the coal mine for you, that a coin is going to explode or a project is going to explode, or just the space is going to get more real? You've talked about the VanEck, you know, VanEck has an index on these things. What else do you think we need to see? I've just talked about, you know, ex-President Trump having basically his own meme coin, which is essentially an NFT or a way to buy his likeness and sell it on the open market. What are the other things that you're kind of looking out for as we get more and more, I think, into a bull market?
I mean, I would say one interesting thing will be to see whether or not Dogecoin gets flipped. Dogecoin has been around forever, and it's got, I can't remember what the market cap is, but an extraordinary market cap if you classify it as a meme coin, something like, is it like 15 billion or something? It's kind of, it's up in the top 10 of on coin market cap. In fact, maybe it's more than 15 billion, maybe it's more like 20 billion or something. But it does have its own blockchain, as it were, so it's a slightly different beast. There are even things called dogenal inscriptions now, which are like the ordinal inscriptions on Bitcoin, for example. And there's also the possibility that Elon Musk embeds it in his Everything app on some level, because it's actually transactionally quite solid, more solid than Bitcoin in terms of micropayments. But I think if something flips Dogecoin this run, that's going to be a big kind of market signal that meme coins are moving into a different kind of velocity or whatever, a new territory. So that'll be a big signal. I think the other important thing that's happened recently is that we have meme coins on Bitcoin via the Runes protocol that Casey Rodemar recently launched to coincide with the Bitcoin halving. And we have one which is called Dog. I don't know whether or not you've heard. I mean, it has a market cap of something like 300 million at the moment, but it got up almost to half a billion at one point and then nosedived for a while. But I think we're likely to see a breakthrough meme coin on Bitcoin, and Bitcoin has never had this kind of activity, and it still has such a center of gravity and such a huge market cap that you'd have to say if there's a breakthrough meme coin on Bitcoin, it might take on a momentum of its own and push beyond the kinds of market caps that we're used to seeing on Ethereum and other platforms. And then I just return to something that you said earlier on, which was the frictionless kind of trading environment of some of these newer chains. I mean, I have a Phantom wallet, and I decided to figure out how to use the Telegram bots for trading meme coins, because it's safer than connecting your wallet directly to a pool from Dex Screener or whatever. So I'll send a bit of Solana to the Telegram bot. I'll copy the contract address to the Telegram bot, and it will say you want to buy this token at what and how much slippage and so on. You press a button and it'll buy the token at a kind of an optimized price, and then I'll send that meme token back to my Phantom wallet. And you would never do that on Bitcoin or on Ethereum, because like you said, half of what you were trying to buy would be chewed up by the network. So, paying 0.008 cents, per transaction or whatever, it's a game changer in terms of the friction and the UI and the UX. So I think that's really important, and that's just going to pour kind of rocket fuel on this whole thing, this cycle round, because suddenly the interface in terms of the user experience has got so much easier that normal people who've never been involved in crypto aren't going to face those kind of barriers to entry.
Calling out Doge is really important, and I want to confirm those numbers. So yeah, you're right. Doge is around 21 billion, and Shiba Inu is in 12th position. Doge is in 10th position on the market caps for crypto, and Shiba Inu is at about 13.5 billion. So I think Shiba Inu will probably be the first one to flip. And then what I'm definitely looking out is to see how crazy Pepe gets. Pepe is one that I know made people I know personally a lot of money. We're talking like they put in $200 and pulled out, six figures. That is stupid, 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 stupid money. Whether you're in the United States, it's a lot of money. Whether you're in Europe, it's a lot of money. This is, however, generational wealth for many parts of people on this planet. If you all of a sudden come into $200,000, for example, in Colombia, the average minimum monthly wage is $325, more or less. So if you have $200,000, you could almost retire instantaneously and just pay yourself out from that, and you'll be good. And you also would have, if you could sell it back into dollars or get stable coins. So the financial aspects of this are absolutely crazy. And I think I hadn't even considered using Doge as kind of like the benchmark. We'll use Doge, and anything that gets above Doge, that is huge. The layer two on Bitcoin will be the story of this bull run, I'm pretty convinced. You have ordinals, runes. I didn't even know this dog project that you're talking about it sounds like it's on runes. That will be ridiculous, especially if it cannot be on mainnet, but if they can figure out how to do it on Lightning, so that way the payments are even cheaper. Because right after the halving, when Runes was launched at block 840,000, the transaction fees went through the roof. And for those listening who don't know about how Bitcoin miners get paid, we get paid in two ways. One, we get paid from a block subsidy, which is basically the blockchain saying, thank you for helping us secure the network. Here's your payment. The other way we get paid are transaction fees. Now, transaction fees are, if I'm sending you Bitcoin, it's the fee I have to pay to basically get it through the protocol, get it through the system, so you get the Bitcoin on the other end. Now, transaction fees are normally a certain small percent of the block reward relatively, but right after the halving, things went out of whack. And because I work for a Bitcoin mining company, miners couldn't have been happier because the transaction fees went up like 10x in about an hour as everyone started to try to use runes and put things on runes and create, you know, basically take their, I think there were things called pre-runes, but really kind of put them then on the blockchain. I think that that will continue. And for a long term, now I'm going to talk a little bit about Bitcoin mining, but I think it's a really important thing. Over the long term, as the block reward halves every 4 years or every 210,000 blocks, transaction fees are going to be the things that keep the Bitcoin mining network profitable, right? So I think longer term, Bitcoin's ability to have good layer twos to socially transact value, whether they're memes, whether they're digital collectibles, whether they're memberships. I think all, you know, country clubs across the world are going to have a Bitcoin Ordinal membership in the next 5 years. If they don't, they're not just not going to be attracting the type of younger people and people that are just kind of like interested in crypto. So thinking about Bitcoin, do you want to call out any specific project? And I want to actually go into Ordinals a little bit because you and I both own Ordinals. We've never really spoken about that. But if you could maybe share some of the Ordinal projects you are in or the Rune projects you're a part of, and then the ones that you're kind of keeping an eye on to say, hey, if that goes down cheap enough, I really want to get in, and then why?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't done a sort of deep dive on some of the, you know, the layer twos in addition to stacks, for example, but I think you're absolutely right. I mean, stepping back, we have to understand, especially with what's been going on in the States recently with the SEC and a clear signal that the ETH ETF isn't going to happen anytime soon, and the Wells notice being issued to Consensus, who own MetaMask, the main non-custodial wallet on Ethereum. You know, Bitcoin has achieved escape velocity. We have the ETFs, we have BlackRock, and all of those TradFi players, Fidelity, etc. So I think it's a no-brainer, really, to now assume that the Bitcoin network infrastructure and the layer twos and the scaling solutions is going to be built out at pace. So it's probably the safest risk reward play in crypto at the moment, I would imagine, because there's no sense of a regulatory overhang, and who knows what might happen if Ethereum is classified as a security, for example, because then basically that means any proof of stake based crypto project is potentially in the crosshairs of the SEC. I'm not quite sure that will happen. I'm kind of hoping that Gary Gensler gets replaced before we get to that juncture. But Ordinals. I love Ordinals, and I was attracted to them because I missed out on the early days of Ethereum NFTs, and it felt really like being given the opportunity to step in a time machine and experience a kind of a nascent artistic culture evolving. I wasn't a really early adopter. I didn't get in when I should have done, which was kind of like, I don't know, whatever, sort of as soon as the wallets got usable, and as soon as it wasn't, you know, as soon as it was easy to store inscriptions in a wallet without getting confused by the interface and so on. But I've been sort of steadily accumulating, not the kind of the projects that have already gone, like Pizza Ninjas and Bitcoin Frogs and all of that stuff. I'd say I have been speculating, trying to buy into projects that I think are going to pump in the future. But I mean, one that I'm interested in the recursive nature of some of these inscriptions. So Billy Resty is one of the artists I've invested in. He did a project called BitBlocks, which is a kind of an abstract generative art project. So it's not based on PFPs. It's more of a kind of, I don't know, they look a bit like Mark Rothko compositions, but the way that it's basically a computer-generated art that refers to an asset that already exists as an inscription on chain, and it will take the colors and some of the dynamics from the original artwork and put them into a computer program, and then it spits out a kind of an abstract generative piece of art based on that inscription that is already on chain. And I think that's kind of like, I love that kind of experimental nature of the stuff that's going on. And I think also, you know, I've been looking in terms of potentially moving into inscriptions from my own perspective in terms of launching a fine art collection on ordinals. But there's a kind of a massive overhead for file size. So I think quite a lot of that pixelated stuff that you see on Bitcoin, in a way, the medium is the message. What you're seeing is you're seeing people innovating and trying to find ways around the limitations of ordinal inscriptions, which make them very different animals to some of the NFTs that you would see on other chains, where the actual asset is stored off-chain on a server like IPFS or whatever. So I think the fact that it's actually inscribed into the Bitcoin blockchain at the base layer, and it's what Casey Rodemaugh calls like a digital artifact, for me is very important in terms of provenance, because it means that it has a chance of surviving forever, or at least until as long as the Bitcoin network itself survives.
Yeah, I find ordinals to be absolutely fascinating. And as someone who is becoming more and more of a Bitcoiner, I have 11 cryptos besides Bitcoin. Some of them I've had since 2017. Some of them I pick up because I just think that they're interesting. And I think playing around in the ecosystem is interesting. And I say I have a soul of a Bitcoin maxi, but I play in the sandbox like a degen, because I think it's interesting to play around with these things. And much of what we're even talking about now, I don't know if stuff on Bitcoin, yes. First of all, I want to reaffirm what you've said. I totally hear you and I 100% agree. I say this all the time. The only thing that I know that's probably going to be around in crypto, if anything, in 10 years is Bitcoin. It has been approved by the SEC, even if Gary Gensler said he didn't want to do it. It has been approved by the SEC. BlackRock is behind it. BlackRock is the third biggest economic power on the planet behind the United States and China, if it were its own country. It is now taking over some of the biggest gains in the U.S. Stock world, right? Whether it's Coinbase and its growth, whether it's MicroStrategy and its growth, whether it's all the mining stocks, which if you don't own mining stocks and you're into buying stocks, you should definitely look at that. I feel like that's financial advice. I don't want it to be, but those things grow crazily. And you also then have all the Bitcoin ETFs. So there's now so many ways to be able to get direct access or indirect exposure to Bitcoin. I don't think it's going away. And I feel the exact same way about the digital artifacts and the ordinals. I think they're absolutely fascinating, because if Bitcoin is eventually going to underpin the overall global financial system, to where if I'm trying to exchange money from you and I'm a Colombian citizen and you're up in England and I want to send you money, or we both want to send money to someone who's in Kenya, and we're going to use this because the dollar no longer works. It takes so long to send it through banks. And if you've ever sent any money abroad, you know exactly what I'm talking about. If we on that system can put things there into that system that no one can erase and have 100% ownership, I just think it's an absolute game changer. So I'm going to definitely dive into some of that art. I want to call out the art that I bought from a guy named Jonathan Schultz. He's a South African artist. He's out of Las Vegas. And Brian, I'll follow up and send you his information. But I bought two of his ordinals that he, you know, made. And he's also, for having bought two of these ordinals, he's going to send me two of the original paintings that go with each ordinal. So I'm still yet to get those. I'm in no hurry. I said, hey, you know, he's traveling around all the time. He gets commissioned to do art work. He did a commission piece for Gordon Ramsay recently. He's done some commission work for some of the actors who were part of the Ted Lasso show. If you've seen that at all, he's a big deal. And he's mm-hmm. saying, you know what? I have my art. It's wonderful. I want to put it into Web3, because, and this is what I tell any artist, if you open up a thing in Manhattan and you're the greatest artist in New York City and everyone comes to see your artwork, that's only 8.5 million people. If you put this thing up on a platform, the world can see it. And now hundreds of millions of people can buy it and take part, be participatory, as you've called out. That was one of the bigger words that really resonated for me from your article about the meme coins and cryptomania. And for me, Bitcoin, going back to Bitcoin, and Anthony Papaliano says this, so I'm stealing what he says, but he says Bitcoin is the original meme coin. It is the original thing that said, F you to the banks, we can do something different. And kind of what you mentioned earlier, people are looking at the systems and saying, nope, we're going to create a system outside of this system. And even within crypto, meme coins are kind of like that system outside of the system, right? Where you've talked about, you know, the established projects or something like that, you know, the ones that have kind of been around. And it's interesting to think about these projects because now if Bitcoin's the original meme coin, okay, let's assume all crypto is meme coins. They're all taking pokes at the rest of the world and saying we're going to create our own system, right? Because the system you've created honestly is not working for any of us. Or maybe it's working for some of us, but 99% of us aren't gaining. We're going to create our own thing. Bitcoin's original meme. Bitcoin's gone from tenths of a cent to now what, $61,000 the last time I looked. So now that, you know, that meme coin's overpriced. So in that world, Dog with Hat comes along, and this is why Gen Z call Bitcoin a boomer coin, because they don't think that they can get 100x in 2 weeks. And so they're like, I have $100. I work my job. I could either put it into this and have a chance to go 100x, or I could put it into this being Bitcoin, and maybe I go 3 or 4x over the next 2 years. Well, it's $100. I don't really, you know, the whole thing that you said, let's let it rot, let the system rot, screw it, send it, YOLO environment. I'm just going to throw it in the meme coin and see what happens. And that is why I do think meme coins are going to explode. So other than Shiba Inu maybe going and Pepe, just because those are kind of ones that are already in the top 50, what's another meme coin that you think is going to gain traction, not just with the younger generations, but just with any generation that's kind of feeling the financial strife where they have that exact setup I've just set up. They have $100. Somebody might, like me, would be saying, just put it in Bitcoin and wait. You know, Bitcoin is I call it the get rich slow scheme. But they're like, you know what? I got to pay my bills. It's just $100. I'll work a little bit harder next week, do some overtime. I'm going to throw it into X meme coin. What is that meme coin? Besides Shiba Inu and Pepe.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I wonder whether Pepe has a very broad appeal. I mean, it started as a kind of a 4chan meme, and I'm pretty sure it won't be something like that has a kind of a universal appeal for people who aren't already involved in the crypto space or online culture. I mean, I think this new Dog coin, which is called Dog Go to the Moon, that's the Rune ticker, has a chance of going mainstream, but there is a problem with the kind of people aren't going to be buying runes from Magic Eden, but it's already been picked up by a few of the centralized exchanges. So it's already on Gate, for example, and I think it's on a couple of the other centralized exchanges, and it's on it's the first rune to be listed on CoinMarketCap, and I think it's kind of somewhere down sort of on the second tier, like in the 20s or something, or 30s maybe on there, or the second page of CoinMarketCap, I think is how it was described. So it's something like that, like, you know, one of the dog coins that has a kind of broad appeal has a chance. And then I think also, I don't want to keep pointing at Tooker, but Tooker's interesting because it has something. It's not just a token that you buy because you like the picture that the token is associated with or the meme or whatever. It has a media kind of outreach component, which itself could drive interest and create a kind of flywheel, which also supports the burning of the token. So it's got an interesting kind of financial dynamic to it. So that is to say, a meme coin that actually does something a bit more innovative than just your regular common or garden kind of meme coin. And I guess Shiba ultimately, Inu tried that, didn't they, with, you know, creating their own ecosystem and their own decks and all the rest of it. So that's interesting. But yeah, I mean, I think it's either likely to be something with just massive broad appeal, like a very cute dog in a Bitcoin hoodie, or it's going to be something that pushes the boundaries of what meme coins are.
What's Tooker built on?
Tooker's on Solana.
So Solana is the interesting one. Solana is the one, I'm going to quote Jackie Roach here. Solana is the one that Jackie Roach said, and I'm paraphrasing here, it could go to the moon or it could also just blow up. Solana could, and since she said that, it's stuck in my head that, like, I think Solana could be like the FTX, where it's too centralized and, you know, the leaders just take it and run one day, and they're multi-billionaires. Because Solana is in this, from the bear market of 2022, 2023, to where I think it's going to go, it's probably going to go from around $8, and I think it will go to about $1,200. That is making millionaires. That is going to transform people's lives, transform a lot of different things. But I think on the way to do that, because of the crypto dilemma, the trilemma, I think the security is not great. This is why Bitcoin can only have so many transactions on the mainnet, because it's so freaking secure. I'm interested to see what happens with Solana, but I do think Solana is going to be kind of lifted up by meme culture because people love Solana. I also think, and I haven't really engaged too much in the Solana network, but from what I've heard, their wallets that go with that, they're, you know, hot wallets, they're really easy to use. Has that been your experience?
Yeah, I mean, I've only used Phantom. I've got other hot wallets that have Solana as an asset, but the Phantom wallet's the only kind of the only hot wallet that is directly associated with, you know, using it on the Solana network. It's a very nice, clean interface. Everything is easy to use. I think, and I appreciate what you said about, you know, the potential downsides to Solana, both in terms of, you know, the some of the problems they've got with the downtime and the security side of things as they they scale, and also the centralization thing. But ultimately, I think we have to see these as kind of networks that are experiencing network effects. And I wrote about this on my blog a while ago too, which is really, user adoption is driven basically by three primary sort of network factors. And one is time to finality or transaction speed. The other is transaction cost. And then the other is user experience. And you talked about the blockchain trilemma. I mean, decentralization for someone who wants to buy a dog token or an NFT for the average consumer probably isn't even a thing. So I think we're going to have to get used to the fact that Web3, decentralization is a kind of a spectrum rather than a destination. And even on Ethereum projects and Web3 projects, you've got the use of Amazon Web Services and other services that store the assets off-chain and all the rest of it. So, you know, you could argue that there's no such thing as true decentralization, arguably, with the exception of Bitcoin, which is what makes it so unique. But, it doesn't matter to the average user whether or not Solana is decentralized. What matters is whether or not the wallet's easy to use and how much they get charged for per transaction. Certainly from my perspective, using Ethereum, that was the first place that I tried to buy an NFT and eventually succeeded after figuring out why the hell I had to bridge my Ethereum to something called W Ethereum, you know, in the early days, and realizing that I just stocked up my hot wallet with Ethereum and now I had to pay to translate it into W Ethereum, which was supposed to be cheaper because it was on a layer two. You know, it's like, what the heck is all this stuff? You know, it's and why we're talking about decentralization. You might run a transaction on Ethereum and you'll get charged for it just to fail. You know, how does that represent the kind of like this wonderful utopia of decentralization that everyone's talking about? Because to the end user, it doesn't, you know. So there's a whole mixture of things going on here, but certainly from an end user perspective, for the average end user, who's not thinking about the bigger picture and bearer assets and the resilience of a network and being censorship resistant and all the rest of it, really what matters to them is like ease of use, speed of transaction, and cost of transaction.
I think you're so spot on there. I think a lot of projects that I see or people ask me about, or, you know, I'm asked to advise on, they overthink so many things. And it's those focusing on those things, right? The cost of transaction, the speed of transaction, and then how easy can I do the transaction? That is huge. And the trilemma I was talking about, the blockchain trilemma, is scalability, which is basically how many transactions you can kind of do, security, and then decentralization. And if you think about those in a triangle, especially if you're listening on a podcast platform, think about those in a triangle. You have scalability, security, and decentralization. And essentially, you can only choose one leg. So either you just get it scalable and it's decentralized, it may not be secure, or it's scalable and secure, but it's not decentralized, or it's decentralized and secure, but it's not scalable. And that last one really speaks to Bitcoin without Lightning Network, right? Which is changes the way Bitcoin can scale. That is huge. And I think you're right. Most people aren't thinking about, is this a bear asset? They're like, no, I'm trying to move value from one point to the other as quickly as I can. And this was when I first got into crypto. This is why I was like so bullish on it, because I got into crypto in 2017. And at that point I had WhatsApp and I had friends all over the world. And it was illogical to me that I could pick up my phone and FaceTime you and say, Brian, where are you? And you're like, hey, I'm in Cairo. I'm looking at this old artifact. And you and I are FaceTiming in real time. Right now, I'm not going to get into whether WhatsApp is a decentralized network, but the point is my speed to information was so quick. I could FaceTime anyone on this planet right now. So my speed to information is so quick. And that's where the internet started. And you talked about this in your blog, the internet of info, right? That's what it was. Wow, instant info. But in the internet of value, I was like, this makes so much sense, because now I can send value just as almost now, with especially with some chains, right, that are more scalable because they're less decentralized and maybe less secure. I could send you $100 right now using USDC on Base, and it would be to you in about 15 seconds, maybe, to finality. And that just doesn't exist. So anyways, that's one of the reasons why I got into crypto, and you called that out in your blog. And I want to just say this out loud. I'm going to put the article that Brian wrote, which I think is so phenomenal, I'm going to put it, it will be in this episode's show notes. So make sure you go and check that out. Brian, as the last question for you, we've talked about meme coins. Clearly, I think we both think meme coins are going to play a huge role. Clearly, I think we can move further from that and say Bitcoin is going to maybe be the layer for which meme coins sit on in this bull run. Other than those two narratives that maybe are going to happen, what's another narrative that you're kind of keeping your eye on and you're thinking about, hey, I want to write about this moving forward just to kind of stay ahead of it? You know, I think that this could happen because all these things are setting up.
Well, I've written about one of them, but something that I'm definitely keeping an eye on, which is artificial intelligence as it pertains to crypto. I think it's, I mean, obviously, you know, some people think it's a narrative driven thing, and it's speculative and it doesn't really make much sense. And it's just, you know, driven by sort of financial speculation and hot air. But I actually think that there are, you know, a whole host of reasons why the convergence of artificial intelligence and crypto is going to happen. I mean, not least because if you're talking about an AI economy, which I would say is kind of like a racing certainty, really, you know, we talk about an information economy or a social media economy or whatever. I mean, an AI economy is going to happen. And, you know, it's no secret to anyone that it's not going to run on Swift or a TradFi kind of banking payments network with T plus two and all of that. It's going to happen on crypto. And agents are probably going to ultimately have access to their own crypto wallets to pay for transactions that they need to pay for in order to execute tasks. And the other thing is that if we're talking about the importance of a decentralized form of AI, where one or two companies like OpenAI don't own all of the infrastructure and data in the world, and I mean, if you think about it, that's a horrifying thought when you realize how Web 2.0 has bent everything out of shape socially in this kind of business model of surveillance capitalism. I mean, basically, my thinking is basically if you put that and cube it, that's probably what you're looking at with centralized AI, like basically a form of Web 2.0, which is destructive by several orders of magnitude worse. So I think really Web3 represents an existing suite of primitives that can be applied and combined with AI to create a more kind of human-friendly version of AI where we have more sovereignty over our data and over the applications that are being built. So that's one big area. I think there are lots of others. Obviously, gaming is eventually going to take off. And I'm very interested, given Web3 was supposed to really be a replacement on one level for Web 2.0 and the dynamic I've just described about Web 2.0 in terms of social media and the fact that we don't control our social graph and we're the there's no such thing as a free lunch because we're the lunch, that Web3 really doesn't live up to its promise until it changes the social media landscape. And there are all kinds of reasons why that might not happen in terms of network effects and the physical infrastructure being different to a kind of a client server architecture, and trying to figure out all of those problems. And there are probably some interesting protocols like ICP that are doing interesting things in that space, but eventually it's going to happen. I just don't know if it's going to be this cycle.
Yeah, I agree. As someone who's creating content on the internet like yourself, I'm very excited for it. And we already have Mastodon is an interesting thing. There's some other stuff out there right now. I honestly haven't had the time to dive in and play. But the future decentralization of social media where owners, where creators or influencers can really own their creation and then get paid for that, that will change. That to me seems like a very natural progression of everyone now feeling like a brand and everyone feeling like they can influence because they put up a video of themselves, I don't know, drinking a certain, here I am with this water and I drink this water because it's this iodized water, whatever. So I totally think that's true. I bought ICP the day it came out, the day it dropped, and then it went down 97%. I'm still holding. I am holding out for the future of it. I do think ICP is doing interesting things. Well, I've already said I'm going to add your blog to the show notes. I'll add the specific blog that we've referenced today about meme coins, and I'll also just add your basic Substack URL. Besides that, where else should people try and find you and reach out to you?
LinkedIn, I guess. I mean, my website is a good place to read my stuff, which is called Encrypto on Substack. That's encrypto.substack.com. And then I'm on LinkedIn, and I'm happy for anyone to reach out to me there as well.
Sweet. I'm going to add all the links to the show notes, whether you're watching on YouTube or podcast platforms. Please go ahead and subscribe. If you enjoyed this, share this with a friend, family member, colleague. If you're trying to figure out what meme coins are, I highly recommend that you check out, now that you've watched this episode, go check out the blog that kind of, you know, really was the backbone to this episode. And no matter where you're watching, you can find us on social media at More Than Blockchain. Brian, thank you so much for hopping on. And yeah, meme coins kind of explain the world.
Been great fun, Jarrett. Thanks for having me.